Welcome to Jerry Ratcliffe Show. I'm Chris Graham, and we're going to talk. We haven't done this for a while, Jerry. In fact, you and I, the last time we probably talked, football was back in the fall. So we're going to talk some football. We got spring practice starting this week, and Jerry introduced our guest. And also, hey, Jerry, it's nice to talk to you tonight, too.
Oh, it's always great joining you, Chris, for these podcasts. We're having a lot of fun with it and getting a lot of great feedback from our listeners. So we appreciate that. I'd like to welcome in a special guest, a guy I've known since, I guess, his freshman year at Virginia. I knew about him before he got here because I remember sitting with Danny Wilmer down in Mike Smith's office at Hampton High School. And Danny said, we got to have a quarterback. We're trying to find a quarterback. And I remember Mike Smith saying, the best athlete in the state of Virginia is sitting right up there under your nose at Fork Union. It turned out to be this fella who lived up to expectations and beyond. I'm talking about Marcus Hagans. Biscuit, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, Jerry. Thank you for having me, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. We appreciate your time. We know you're a busy man now, getting ready to head into spring football practice next week.
Next Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday. Keep our fingers crossed on all things COVID and weather and everything else wise.
Absolutely.
One thing I wanted to bring up before we get into spring practice, Marcus, is that there's always been an old axiom that championship teams are built in the offseason. Talk about this team's offseason and what impressed you.
I think their resilience to want to get better. The way we ended the season was not how we envisioned, and I don't think the players were satisfied with that. And the best way you correct the retaliation from the previous season is how hard you work in the offseason. So I think the guys have kind of set that foundation. I think our strength staff, Coach Grizz and those guys and his staff have done an amazing job putting together an offseason that really has reflected guys working hard, growing as leaders, and just coming together, doing hard things together as Coach Mendenhall believes in. So I think it's been a really good offseason. I'm really excited to get going for spring ball and just to see not only how much stronger and faster and bigger guys have gotten, but how much better football players they can become over spring ball. So I'm really excited about that.
You have coached 5 of the top 10 wide receivers in terms of career receptions. We're talking about Joe Reed, Olamide Zaccheaus, Hassis Dubois, Chris Bird, Darius Jennings, and 9 of the top 25 receivers in UVA history in receiving yards. I know you don't want to pat yourself on the back, but you've done a pretty damn good job.
I appreciate that. I do. I appreciate all the guys on that list, and I appreciate the guys that aren't on that list as well, because the guys that I've been fortunate enough to be around, to have the privilege of being their coach and just be mentors and be a part of the journey, I'm beyond thankful. So as much as I am proud of the guys that represent that, those numbers and those stats, I'm just as proud of the guys who contributed to the culture of building UVA's receiving core as one of the most respected in the country. We got a lot of work left to be done, but my job is to get the best players that I can possibly get and make the whole world go and notice and understand that we catch the ball here at UVA and we want to be the best in the country. And that's our goal.
I know in several interviews I've had in the past with Olamide and Hassis, they both talked about you as more than just a position coach, as their position coach, that you have helped turn their lives around, helped get them focused on their goals in life and essentially reverse their football fortunes, because they both said they seemed lost until you kind of got into them a little bit and you got their attention, and look what the successes those guys have turned out to be.
They are amazing, just two stories. And, there's so many other guys too that have, similar stories of, just buying in. And my whole thing is, I'm old school. I played for some really good coaches that taught me some core values. I also come from a really good family that has a lot of good core values. And then my wife also brings a lot of core values to the table as well. And so I just try to be a reflection of all the things that I've learned in my life and also having been a student athlete here at the University of Virginia, just my experiences, the things that didn't go well, the things I've learned from, the people I've learned from. And it just, it goes back to simple things, just hard work, you know, dedication and sacrifice. And if those guys aren't, you know, my wife says it all the time, if those guys aren't working as hard as the people who helped them get here, then every day they're doing themselves and those people a disservice. And so I just try to remind them of that and hold them accountable to that every day. And, you know, when guys finally buy in and the green light goes off, it's so rewarding. So I'm thankful that those guys feel that way, but I'm very grateful to coach some really good young men. And, you know, hopefully if football for some reason doesn't work out, that they are stable enough to have a foundation to go on and be successful men in life and not just be identified for what they do when the football's in the air.
Well, let's delve into that a little bit more. I know I've covered college football almost my entire life. And I've seen a lot of coaches who will see a guy who's struggling or not focused or not buying in, as you said, and they'll just kind of turn their head to those guys and those guys will just kind of flounder. But what is it within you that wants to help these guys turn things around?
Because I don't ever want to give up on someone. And, you know, I can only imagine what it would feel like if someone gave up on someone in life. And so if guys are willing to try, they're willing to work, then I won't ever give up on them. The day I give up is when they give up. They just refuse to do anything. And over a period of time, not just once, not just twice, but they just refuse to just give up and give up on life. At some point when that happens, there's nothing else I can do. I have yet to coach someone like that. And I focus on seeing the good and what could be in people. And that's just kind of how I've been all my life, because that's just how I was raised. And I believe every young man is worth saving and that you can help every person that you come across, sometimes to a default of, you know, it requiring a lot of extra time outside of what's the normal hours. But man, when you see a young man that's gone through so much and he walks across that stage and he gets his degree and his family is standing in the crowd and they're crying and they're excited. And, you know, the biggest appreciation I could get is when someone tells you, thank you. Like, you know, thank you. Like, to me, that those two words mean so much. And so if someone can come to UVA, get an amazing degree, play amazing football, and just change their life for the better, no matter what it requires behind the scenes, no matter how many extra hours it requires, to me, it's all worth it. And to me, that's fulfilling my purpose. And my wife is huge, like huge on believing I'm paying it forward. And that basically just says that we'll do anything and everything we can to help you succeed without the expectation of anything in return. And that's really kind of changed my life and how I coach. And so that's kind of where that comes from. Like, I just want to help everybody. I know that seems like a tall task, but I do. I enjoy what I do. I enjoy who I do it with. And most importantly, I enjoy where I am. Like, that's why I'll be here as long as they'll have me. Virginia's home, and, you know, I'll do it as long as they'll let me.
And you keep referring to your wife. And for those who don't know your wife, Lauren is a sweetheart, former UVA basketball player. And I know she keeps you and your two sons straight.
She definitely does. And, you know, she's had some battles over the last couple of years, and she's the toughest woman I've ever met in my life. And, you know, she does it with grace and kindness. She embraces the players as if they're her own. And she definitely does an amazing job of raising our boys with, you know, some of the times that I have to miss based upon my job and travel. But I'm only who I am because of her. And I wouldn't be able to do what I do without her. So definitely. So anyone who knows her knows that, feels the same sentiment. She's an amazing person, and she would do anything in the world for you if she knew you.
Chris?
Yeah, Marcus, I wanted to ask, how – for our listeners out there who can only imagine how tough it's been for college athletes, the athletics programs, coaches, everybody, to do what you guys have done. I mean, this time last year, we were just starting to figure out how to use Zoom. You guys had to keep a team together through Zoom for a few months. And then you played a season. And now, you know, getting ready for spring. How tough has it been to keep everybody focused, getting better, And then, of course, now with spring football coming up, I mean, maybe there's a return of some normalcy, but we can only just imagine how tough it's been for you guys.
It's definitely been tough. I mean, you know, the guys are getting tested 3 times a week, you know, and, you know, just to work out, and, you know, college hasn't been college. You know, you want to say, let's just, you know, let's work out today. Let's go to class and then let's get together and let's hang out, you know, at the lawn. You can't even really do that. You know, let's go get a bite to eat. You can't really do that. So, you know, just the simple things that, you know, go on for day-to-day life. And you don't want to sound insensitive because so many people have lost so much throughout this pandemic. So I don't want to say that, and, you know, as being insensitive. So I just think, as far as us as a program and probably a lot of college sports around the country, just the normal things that you probably took for granted, you appreciate more now. And so now guys are having the opportunity to look forward to spring ball, whereas opposed to last year, this time everyone was at home and we were just learning how to use Zoom, how we could, you know, manage meetings, you know, how we could help them work out at home. And, you know, all that stuff was the challenge. Like, we couldn't make it mandatory to have them lift. And, you know, some guys had resources to gym, some guys didn't, you know, some guys had weights, high school, everything was closed down though. So everybody was at a different level. So it was hard to set a standard for everyone to adhere to because everyone was in different situations. Certain guys in certain different geographic parts of the country were on different restrictions than others. Some were in total lockdown, some were in some lockdown. So it was just hard. And so now to have everybody here for the full off season and excited to go in the workout, spring ball on Tuesday, it's a huge accomplishment, stepping stone so far, and hopefully we get to complete spring ball and give us a chance to reestablish the culture that we really didn't get a chance to do last year. I know that was kind of long-winded, but hopefully that answers your question.
Oh, no. And I also wanted to ask about Pro Day was this past week, and not only the guys who were the most recent alums, but even some guys from past years came back. A couple wide receivers came back as well from under your tutelage. I want to get your thoughts as a guy who went through that yourself. I mean, obviously you had a pro day, you had to get ready. How do you think it was for these guys this year? I mean, it's different, but at least in the case for Dejon and Hassiz, they at least had a pro day. They didn't have a pro day last year. So, your thoughts on, you know, your experience versus their experience getting ready for NFL draft.
I think for, you know, a couple of things. One, you know, I was very fortunate enough to go to the NFL Combine, which they didn't have that this year either as well. And so, you know, kind of, you know, being in touch with Hassiz over last year, being in touch with Dejon last year, you know, Dejon, you know, fortunately was able enough to get drafted in the CFL, but they didn't get to play. So it was kind of like he was in the same boat as Hassiz. And so for those guys that really stay committed for a whole year without having really any validation that they were still football players was a huge thing. At the same time, I think they learned a lot about themselves and, you know, what it's like or who they are without football. And so, you know, I remember preparing for, you know, pro day and, you know, going through that whole process. And, you know, it was a lot different then. Like I remember it snowed the day we had pro day. So, you know, back then it was in the cage. We ran, then we came outside on the field turf and, you know, we did our drills and, you know, it was freezing outside. I remember, like, I think the Brigashaw had on like a white tank top. Like, we didn't even have, you know, NFL pro day gear back then. We were just kind of showing up in our own thing. And so now to see those guys like really have a full presentation of pro day, you know, to really have like gear that represents, you know, their time here, their name, the stations, all those things set up, and you can do it in the indoor. And so I think that was pretty cool. And I think they managed it pretty well. You know, we really tried to do some things together so the guys could all be there to see them, but with classes and, you know, just COVID and things, it wasn't as conducive for us to get our whole team there to be able to watch. Families couldn't be there. So, you know, that made it a little bit different because you always want the younger guys to see that, you know, so they can be inspired to say, I can't wait for my day. And, you know, root for guys that have given so much to the program. But I thought it was an awesome day. I really did. With all things considered and what we've been through, I thought it was an awesome day. And I thought those guys really got a chance to show what they can do. And, you know, hopefully it helps going into this 2021 season. Had to think about it for a second.
Back to you, Jerry.
You know, we touched on it a while ago about all the successful receivers that you've coached at Virginia. How did you mold yourself into a guy who could bring out the best in these receivers? Was it just your personal experience, what you learned in college and in three stints with different NFL teams. Did you learn from other people? Do you seek out information from coaches and other programs? Where did you develop your thing?
I think kind of the same way as a player, like you watch, you know, as a quarterback, like you watch different guys. So I might not be able to play like Matt Schaub because he's taller, but there's things that I can see, like how he prepares or how he approaches and certain, you know, certain things that he does on the field. You know, look at a Bryson Spinner. I might not be exactly like him, but there's certain things that I can take. And then as you start watching film and preparing, like you might see a guy in the conference that you play against, he's like, oh, I like how he plays, you know, so you kind of take bits and pieces from everyone that you have the level of respect for or that you get to see every day and you kind of make it your own game, like do it your way. And I think coaching is no different. You know, I'm a reflection of my very first coach of, you know, Stanley Mann to Thomas Henry to Coach Mike Smith to Coach Schumann to Coach Groh to Coach Henry Ellard, you know, who was my receivers coach in the NFL and Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, you know, just a culmination of so many different people. Coach Mendenhall, like Coach London, like so many people that I've learned from over the years, Poindexter. And then it's just like I watch what guys do well and they have success with. And then I think for me, it's always like I've always been a people person. Like, you know, and, you know, even when I was college, like I liked being around people. Like I never thought I was above anyone. You know, so I always love to connect with people. I love to be in the community. And I think it's the same way now as a coach. Like, you know, I love to connect with everybody. And I just try to find out why people play this game, what their goals and ambitions are, and how I can help them achieve those. And so I'm not a big yeller. I'm not a big screamer. You know, I talk and I say what I mean. And I like to hold guys accountable, but also like to have fun. I'm going to push you hard. Like, I want you to be the best that you can be. I sincerely mean that. And I'm going to be fun. And there's a time where, you know, I'm the coach and you're the player. And then there's a time for me to remove the desk and get to know you as a young man, from man to young man who I'm trying to help become better. And so just hopefully the example that I set every day is a husband, a father, you know, a coach, a mentor, and just a person that'll listen. You know, that's what drives me. That's my purpose. I feel like I'm fulfilling it. Doesn't make me perfect, but you know, I think I'm a culmination of a lot of people that I've been fortunate enough to come across. And I'm a reflection of all those kind of encompassed in the way that I like to do things.
Now, you mentioned your connection with the community, which is very strong. And I know that Charlottesville appreciates that aspect of you. Talk about the groundskeepers. I know you're an integral part of that. And what you guys are trying to do to integrate with the community and just to bring people together and help people, inspire people.
I think one of the things, you know, in light of a lot of the racial injustices that happened last year, and I mean, have been really been going on for a long time now, over a lot of years. So last year, it kind of gave us a little bit more time to really focus on those things because we didn't have football. And so as a nation that needed some healing, some coming together, you know, some options, we decided to kind of come together with a group of guys that were looking to make a difference, not just come up with a cool slogan, wear a cool t-shirt, but like something we could really do to really make a difference and create change. And so Coach, you know, kind of gave me the platform to say, listen, we want to be a part of change. Here's an opportunity, take some guys, come up with whatever group you want to come up with, and let's find a way how we can make change. And so within that, kind of put out like an opportunity for guys to kind of join if you wanted to make a difference. And I think we had about 15 players, Luke Goldstein, Justin Anderson, and missing one more, myself as coaches, really just became like the overseers. And then guys like Charles Snow and Terrell Janna, Nick Jackson, Nino Grant, you know, about 12 or 15 guys. I know I probably don't have to tell everybody, but basically we came up with the idea that we were going to create change through empathy, education, and positive action. And so before we could make a change in the world, we thought about looking at grounds first. And so before we could change the community, before we could change the state of Virginia, we needed to look at grounds first. And so I think maybe Jana and Charles were the ones that came up with the idea of calling the group the groundskeepers. Let's always ensure that we take care of our grounds. Let's go back and see what we can change to make better for the future. And then always ensure that our grounds are safe and sacred and always in a positive light. And the first thing that we came up with was the march, which, you know, starts down at Heather Highway and kind of proceeds all the way back to grounds where, you know, the people came in that August and, you know, kind of marched and brought negativity. So the thought was, where someone, man, that was probably just trying to protest and create positivity, Heather Haya lost her life. We'll start there and honor her. We'll walk back all the negativity starting downtown. But on the way, we would stop by the Enslaved Workers Memorial. That would give everyone an opportunity to be educated on the people who helped build the university, right? And then hopefully that would create conversation, understanding, and then that would push all the way back to the back of the rotunda where everyone could finish. And then you kind of post and kind of talk about what you experienced. And what we started to see is that there was a huge connection of people realizing like there was a lot of hate throughout that walk. And then there was also a lot of appreciation for like a lot of people that didn't get credit. So if you go to the Enslaved Workers Memorial, there's names, but then there's also like just occupation. So it'll say like he was a worker or a butcher or like just an occupation. Like, could you imagine tracing your history, your family lineage all the way back to where now it's just the occupation? Like your greatest of grandfathers doesn't have a name, or your greatest of, and like, to me that was really powerful. And then what we also learned is that it was designed, like it has all these like inlets, like cut within the structure. So when it rains, it looks like those are tears like falling within the structure. So there's a lot of history that was there that we learned, and a lot of people learned as well. And it gave us a way to connect to the community. And so what COVID did, and hopefully I'm not getting too long-winded, what COVID did was kind of restricted us from getting involved with the community because people had to quarantine. We didn't understand how to navigate the virus and, you know, just what those ramifications were to our team once we started playing. So once we got everybody back in August, we had to keep everyone to Copley. So we had everyone locked. All they could do was go to Copley and McHugh. And so that really hurt us last year because we really wanted to start. We have about 6 or 7 agenda items that we really want to do with the community, which are still on hold until hopefully with people becoming more vaccinated and hopefully we can get through spring, we can, you know, unroll these things over the summer. But that was one of the ways that we were able to just kind of take back our grounds, right? Just acknowledge the fact that UVA is an amazing place, but it wasn't founded on all the best reasoning or behind the best ideas, which is okay. It doesn't mean that that's how we are today, but that's how we originated. And so just recognizing the past and then looking for ways to create a better future. That's what we really believe in. And we're doing it through empathy, positivity and education. So I know that was a lot, but hopefully I got to answer your question. A lot of amazing young men within the group. We've also added another group. Women's lacrosse has a chapter as well for the groundskeepers. So now we have a football chapter. Now we have a women's lacrosse chapter, and hopefully more groups will join us. But the women's lacrosse team is doing an amazing job of doing some things as groundskeepers as well. So we're excited for 2021. We're just hopeful to get everyone vaccinated, get everyone safe, so we can do more things to bridge the community. Because we also feel like there's a gap between the UVA community and the Charlottesville community. And we want to find a way to bring everyone together. Like, there's a lot of lifelong fans that have never been to a game. Like, how is that possible? You know, like, we're trying to bridge the gap of all those people to bring them together and find ways to do that. So we have some things on the agenda. Hopefully we get a chance to get to those this summer.
Now, that was a beautiful description of that that entire process, and I thank you for it. On a lighter note, I can't help but notice on Twitter sometimes some of the cutest videos I've ever seen of your two sons dancing. I'm just wondering where they got their moves from. Did they get those from you?
From their mom, all day.
From their mom?
They dance like their mom. Their mom, Lauren, man, she loves music. Her family loves to dance. My family does too, but like Lauren, anytime she hears music, she loves to get up and dance. So I would say if you guys think the moves are good, then they're probably hers. If you don't think they're probably mine. So I'm going to give her credit on that one.
Okay. They're pretty good, by the way. You know, we've talked about some of the great receivers you have coached. The guy who intrigues me so much is Lavelle Davis Jr. only five players, FBS players, since 2000 have 500 receiving yards or more on 20 or fewer receptions, which is almost mind-boggling. And he did it as a freshman.
Yeah.
How good can this guy be? I mean, he just blew our socks off last year with the some of his performances. It was eye-popping, to say the least.
I think Lavelle has a bright future. And, you know, God willing, he stays healthy. You know, he's very humble. He works hard. You know, he's one of the first people to the building every morning. He listens. And I think the sky's the limit for him. And, you know, he's got a little bit of advantage by being 6'7" and, you know, having some athletic ability. But what people don't see on a day-to-day basis is how hard he works. Like, the game of football is really important to him. And who he's becoming because of his hard work and his consistency, I think it's starting to garner the respect of his teammates, not just like, oh, he made a big play. It's like, that's who Lavelle is. Like, he works hard. And so I think that if he stays on that path consistently, doesn't read his own press clippings, I think he has a chance to become really, really good and be one of the best to ever play here. So I'm excited for him. I'm on him every day. You know, and I got a good group of guys. I really do. And, you know, I know we're talking about him, but there's some guys in that group that I think are really going to take our football program to the next level. And I'm really excited to coach those guys and, you know, just watch who they become. That's the fun part. You know, the hardest part is getting them here. The fun part is helping them develop. So I'm excited for what the future holds, not only for Lavelle, but for the whole group as well. I think we have some really good players there.
He's got to read some of his press clippings, doesn't he? I mean, at least mine.
I'm sure he does. And it's my job to pop those bubbles when they start floating. how great he is, but
I'll try not to blow his head up too much.
it's earned, but it's a matter of how you receive it. And so, you know, it's good to get recognition for your accomplishments and your hard work, but it's also in the same breath, you have to remain humble and keep working as if those things don't exist. So I'm just here to remind them of that reality of when that bubble starts to float, I just send a pen and pop it and tell them to get back to work. So he can read them all when he's done.
Did you discover him? How did you guys find him? It's like nobody knew about this guy. And then, you know, you guys kept him under wraps through training camp. And then the first game he pops up and we're saying, where did this guy come from?
I'll tell you, I'll be honest. Shane Hunter had the South Carolina area. And he was like, man, I'm telling you, there's a kid you need to go see. Like, I'm just telling you, you need to go see him. And, you know, he's out in the country. Like, you know, like, he's off the beaten path, you know, very small school. And, you know, I remember, you know, Shane kept texting me, did you see him yet? Did you see him yet? And I'm like, man, this dude better be something special. And so when he came through the door and I was like, holy crap. he was tall. And when you got a chance to talk to him, like, he was so beyond his years, not even with football, but just maturity wise of like how he carried himself. He was a really good student. You know, he had goals. He was already goal oriented, came from a really good family. Coach loved him. Community loved him. You know, when you walk through the door at the school, the secretary was like, oh, you guys, are Lavelle, da, da, da. Like, all right, I get it. You guys are trying to sell him to me. But everything that everyone said that I came across, you know, you always hear the stories like, yes, the janitor, this, that. Like, the people working in the school, the teachers, the janitors, they all wanted to come and tell me how great Lavelle was of a person. And when I saw him, I was like, oh my God. And he's been everything that we've expected so far. But I do think what he can become, I think he's just scratching the surface. So I got to give credit to Coach Hunter. It was his area. He found him. And then I just helped him get here. So that's how we found him.
Chris?
Yeah. So as we're getting ready to start Tuesday, God willing, with practice, what are the focal points? I mean, didn't get to have practice last year, didn't get to have a spring last year. And so, you know, you talked about that earlier, the development was tougher, obviously, last year. But what's the focal point this first week of practice?
Get the first one and get the last one. Yes. No, really, you just want to see guys grow. You know, there's a lot of guys that are no longer a part of the team, so new roles and new opportunities are available. You want to see how guys can be, you know, how they can grow from last year to this year, what roles guys can assume, and then who can be counted on to do more. And so I think the level of competition will be good. You know, spring ball is always fun because all you do is go against each other every practice. And, you know, I'm sure by week two, there'll probably be a couple fights. You know, guys get tired of going against each other. And, you know, it's all good the first 2 days. Like, everybody's excited. Everybody's happy. And then about five practices in, you got three fights to practice because everybody's just tired of it and looking forward to the spring game. So, I do. I think there's a lot of opportunity for growth. I think there's a big – I think our quarterback will take a big jump. You know, normally from first to second year, your quarterback takes the biggest jump. And then I think along with offense, defense and special teams have a lot of things that we all want to get better at and clean up. And so, you know, I think it'll be good competition all around the board because there's not one group out of the three phases coming in saying, like, we've arrived and, you know, we were the reason why we were – nationally ranked and, you know, finishing the ACC championship and those things. Like, everyone has something to prove. And so I think every day is going to be a battle. You know, every period of practice is going to be a battle. And, you know, I think every chance we get it to scrimmage, I think it's going to be some hard hitting and it's going to be some fun, some plays made. So I'm looking forward to all of it. I'm looking forward to the battles, to getting better. And then the guys just practicing. Like I said, we didn't have this last year. So, you know, I'm excited. I'm ready to go.
Jerry?
Yeah, I we won't want to keep you a whole lot longer because I know you got two little boys in there want to get your daddy's attention. But
no worries at all.
What's it like coaching for Bronco? What have you learned that's made you a better coach?
I think just how you do certain things. And coach always teaches from a vantage point of seeing the whole picture. So he doesn't just talk to me as if like I'm a receivers coach or anyone for that matter on our staff as if you're a position coach. He's always teaching and giving advice and insight onto how this affects the whole team as a head coach. And so, you know, having, you know, postseason meetings of where you stand, of things you can get better at, things you do well, you know, he's always allowing you to learn and grow and become better each year. And so I think that those things and just insight onto running an organization and being a head coach has really opened my eyes from a different perspective of how everything comes together. And just watching, you know, just some of the things in the program that we didn't have previously that are now a part of our program, you know, it's just, it's a cool thing to see, not only just as a coach, but as an alum, you know, some of the things that are coming to fruition for our program. And, you know, I know there's a lot of things in the works still to be done, but I think our program, just for resources and things that we have, I think we're in a much better place now. And hopefully, you know, the new building will come soon and, you know, we'll continue to build and, you know, add the right people. And, you know, hopefully we'll look up and, you know, in a few years or so, we'll be competing for national championships just like the rest of baseball and basketball and those teams. So that's the plan.
And on the recruiting front, which I know is the lifeblood of your program or any program, you guys are starting to make some headway in the state of Virginia. You had a few guys in this last class. Now you're targeting a lot of guys for the next class. What do you see a breakthrough there for the in the state of Virginia? It's been tough for you guys or your opponents from down the road, rivals down the road, to keep guys in the state. But it looks like you're making some headway.
You were breaking up. I couldn't hear the other part of that question about the
guy. It just looked like you were making some head.
Just joking. I didn't want to.
Oh, okay. I get it. I know. Curses, right?
No, it's all good. I think it's good. I think, you know, when guys can stay in state no matter what school they go to, I think it's a good thing. And that's just, you know, me being honest. You know, I do. I like when guys stay in state. I think the thing for us, winning some games, I think, you know, winning that in-state game is a huge thing for guys because a lot of those guys hadn't seen us beat, you know, that other school. And so now, you know, when that happens, I think it opens eyes. And I think there's always like this association that, you know, you can only succeed here if you're academically strong. And I think that people don't realize that there have been a lot of really good football players that have come through here that have been able to do both. And this this image that they try to paint of what a UVA student athlete looks like, I think that I think that's pretty unfair, and I don't think that people always recognize the history of student athletes that have gone here, that have made this place successful, you know, in all sports. And so I think as we continue to recruit a foundation of student athletes that'll come in, that'll work hard, that'll do the schoolwork, but make no bones about it. Like we're not putting together a debate team. Like we're here to win football games. Like we want guys that are ambitious and want to go get drafted and want to play in the NFL. And I think the more we appeal to those guys, which it seems like we're starting to do, and guys can realize like, man, I can play great football and I can get a great degree. I think now our recruiting is starting to turn once we can get those guys that realize that we do want guys that want to go to the NFL. We do want guys that want to get drafted. And I think that's kind of helped us out, you know, as far as of recently, you know, finding more guys that are suited for to do both and not just one or the other.
Yeah, and for historical purposes, I know at least I know one guy specific, but several other guys who came here maybe is not the greatest students in the world, and they ended up becoming very good students after they arrived and graduated and went on to better things. One of them is one of the greatest football players in UVA history. So
I agree, and I think sometimes like, you know, you'll hear people say, you know, and Virginia's for the common person, right? But we can't have an elitist idea of that representing only one spectrum of the whole university, right? If it is for the common person, then the common person has to feel confident that they can succeed here. And we can't be afraid to bring that common person in here, or that common person can't be afraid that they're going to fail if they do come here. Because like you say, there are a lot of guys that, you know, based or females too, I don't want to make it sound one-sided, that may have come from situations that may not have had all the similar resources that other, you know, areas or schools may have had. But once they've gotten here with the right help, with the right resources and the right people, they've been able to succeed and thrive and actually become better students based upon the help that they've received. And so I think that I'm one of those people. You know, my GPA actually went up almost a whole point higher from high school than it did to college just because of the people. And I wouldn't trade my experience in high school for anything in the world. But once I didn't even know what private schools were in high school. I'm just being completely honest, right? But when you get here and you find out what private schools are, you like, man, like most of our teachers were just, you know, part-time teachers. You know, like they were going back and forth. And then, you know, the other thing too, like in my high school where a lot of athletes come from, right? Also in that area, the majority of what we see in and out of school are not college recruiters. They're from the Army, they're from the Navy, they're from the shipyard. And so when you see that, like you feel like that's all that you're gonna have, right? As you know, when you have like these college fairs and you know, like that day is set up in the cafeteria, and then there's the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the shipyard. And it's like, those are the main things that you see every day. Those are what people feel like they are only going to be allowed to grow to. And there's nothing wrong with serving our country. But for the athletes that want to go to D1 and all they see is that, that's a tough thing to swallow. And so I think a lot of communities in different areas of the country, they face that. And so without the right amount of resources, some guys can struggle or get overlooked. But I think at UVA, with the people that we have, as long as a young man, a young woman shows promise that they're willing to work, I think that almost every common person that we refer to that we want our university to reflect can succeed here if given the right opportunity. And so I think that has really helped us out moving forward. I think we appeal more to the common person than this elitist image that they try to portray. I don't buy into that. I do think UVA is for the common person, and I think that we continue to build towards that. I think we'll have more appreciation for what UVA produces as opposed to just what the image people try to portray. That's just my two cents. So,
no, that's very very well spoken. Very very well said. We'll close on football. Everybody who's familiar with Marcus Higgins knows about your upset over Florida State back in 2005. They were, I think, number 4 in the country or something. But It's a close. I've known Bobby Bowden. I got to know him pretty well during his coaching days, and that's the closest I've ever seen him come to cursing. That's when we asked about you after that game, and he said that damn number 18. Never seen anybody have a game like that. You gotta have incredibly fond memories of that game. That was one of the best wins in Virginia history.
I'm not gonna lie. Like I really enjoyed that night, that game, and you know, everyone came and played well that night. You know, it was just one of those nights that, you know, it was weird. The lights went out and we stayed in halftime longer than usual, but it was just one of those like electric, you know, atmospheres, and night games are always my favorite. And I just felt like we could have played for forever. And, you know, it was personal. That the Florida State game to me was personal because my first year I came in the Colorado State game and we lost on the 1 yard line. That man, I'll never forget that. Out of all the plays in my career at UVA, that sticks out the most because of that play on the 1 yard line. The next week I started quarterback at Florida State. Didn't finish the game. Coach pulled me out. I was like, I seen enough. 2 years later, I was starting. They were like sixth in the country. We were fifth in the country. We flew down there. It was hyped that we were going to beat them. And man, lo and behold, fourth quarter, got a hit pointer, didn't get to finish. They beat us. So my senior year, my last year, I said, I'll be damned. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'll be damned if I don't leave beating these dudes. I'm telling you right now. And I remember Monday, and Coach will tell you, I remember Monday I was sitting in my class and I told the teacher, I'll be back. I got to go. I ran straight to Coach's office. I said, look, Coach, I said, I normally don't do this about game plans. I said, this is how we're going to beat Florida State. This is what we have to do. And I said, I promise you, I'm not leaving without beating Florida State. And so, man, that whole week, it just felt right. And I just kept telling the dudes, like, man, I'm not losing to these dudes. Like, I'm not leaving without beating them. And, man, when that clock, I think Tony Franklin picked the pass off at the end to kind of seal the game. Man, I was so happy. Like, I don't even know what I did with my helmet. I had to go back out and take a knee. I was so happy. I didn't know what I did with my helmet. So I think I wore somebody else's helmet to take the last, like, two knees. And I was just so happy. And I'm thankful for that moment because it seems like people appreciate that moment as a part of, like, UVA history. And so there are a lot of people that'll play here at UVA, but very few people can say, like, they're a part of, like, history, like something that really sticks out that people will remember for a long period of time, long after you play. And to me, like, to be able to be a part of that, and not just me personally, but, like, that team, that accomplishment, if that means that much to some people, like, that's an accomplishment for me. You know, so my kids can, you know, hear about, man, your dad played on a team that upset Florida State. And, like, that means a lot to me. But I don't ever want to, and I tell people this all the time, I didn't win that game by myself. And so, you know, as much as he said that daggone 18 and all those things, man, the defense played well. Connor Hughes played unbelievable, kicking all those field goals. You know, Wally made some great plays. The O-line, like, it just, everybody contributed. And so I know people always say, like, it's me, but I always see us. And that's something that'll always connect us for years and years to come. And if that's one of the highest points in UVA history or one of the most celebrated in UVA football history, I'll take it because that's my guys. That's not just me, it's us. And that's something that means a lot to me. So it was an amazing night, but just the guys that we accomplished that win with, that meant more than any personal individual accomplishment. So that's what I take away from it the most.
Yeah, that was a night I'll never forget, and I'm sure Chris won't either. And all the Wahoo fans out there listening, I'm sure that's a memory they'll carry to their graves. So
that was a fun night, man. That when we got out of there, it was about 1 o'clock, so everything was halfway shut down. So I said, listen, man, we just need about an hour to celebrate. So don't shut down on us yet. So we did. We had a fun time, and I just remember, man, all the guys just really being so excited. And so that's something that I'll always remember as a part of my time here. And just like playing and coaching now, like the people make UVA, just like you guys, like the people, like they can talk about all of the rotunda, the lawn and all those things. But the thing I remember most about my playing days and as a coach are the people. And that to me is what makes the difference in this place called University of Virginia. Not the establishments, not the structures, but the people, like my academic advisors, my professors, you know, trainers like Kelly and Ethan, Dr. McHugh, you know, Dr. McKnight, like my coaches, like my teammates, like that's what makes my experience here so different. And that's what I think represents the city of Charlottesville. That's why I believe that everything that we want to do and become better at is through the people, you know, the local restaurants, you know, the people who support you that you've never met, the people who have been lifetime fans of UVA but never been to a game. Like, that's what this place means to me, and that's what I always want to embody. And there's a lot of things that we have to change and correct, but man, I'm telling you, like, I would pick UVA a million times over and over and over again just based upon the people. And that's something that's been consistent since I stepped on grounds to now as my 11th year going in as a coach. The people are amazing, and I think that's what separates us.
Awesome. Got anything else, Chris?
No, just I want to play football for Marcus Higgins. I want to come back in a future life and run routes for Coach Higgins over here, because man, you got me inspired. I'm a UVA alum, and I think a lot of these things too, Marcus. But man, you just that's so well said. Thank you for you know putting it the way you did there.
Thank you very much for having me, and that means a lot to hear you say that. So I represent one of so many amazing people who have been fortunate enough to wear the honor of honors. And, you know, I'm just thankful. I'm thankful for the opportunity to be here, to be a UVA alum and, you know, coaching at a place that I call home. You know, my best friends went to school here, met my wife here, and now my kids are growing up here. And I think that every time we get a chance to tell people about how amazing this place is, like, you know, I don't take that for granted. I don't take that lightly. And I'm very, very grateful to be in the position that I am and represent this university.
I was a wide receiver in high school. I think you could have gotten a little more out of me.
Possibly. You never know.
Maybe not. All right, brother. We really appreciate you. And thank you so much for your time. And hopefully we'll be able to actually cover some of the spring football. I don't know. I guess it'll still be by Zoom, but maybe if you have a spring game, I'll at least see you down on the field from the press box.
that would make my day. At least you guys have more content to write about this go around. And, you know, hopefully, you know, like you say, and, you know, it sounds like, you know, we had a department meeting a few weeks ago, and, you know, hopefully things are on the positive trend and, you know, will allow us to have, you know, more people in the stands for this upcoming season. So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed and be, you know, positive and optimistic. And, you know, we'll kind of see how this, you know, runs its course. But it does sound like with vaccinations and, you know, other ways of understanding the virus that we'll have a better opportunity to have a more normalcy for this upcoming season. So that would be awesome.
All right. Thank you, man. Good luck this spring.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you guys very much. Have a great evening.
You too. Thanks.
I'd like to introduce to our audience Brian Plum, CEO of Blue Ridge Bank, one of our sponsors for the Jerry Ratcliffe podcast, and we really appreciate them investing in believing in our podcast and in my website, jerryratcliffe.com. Brian, welcome, and tell us a little bit about Blue Ridge Bank and what makes it so special.
Yeah, absolutely, Jerry. So Blue Ridge Bank's been around since 1893, making it one of Virginia's oldest community banks. And following a recent merger with Bay Banks of Virginia, Virginia Commonwealth Bank, now also one of the largest community banks in Virginia. And we're able to bring our innovative approach and that size to bear for our clients. We have a focus that puts our clients and our communities at the top of our priority list and recognize that everything we do, we're able to do only because of our clients and the communities we serve.
I know you take a lot of pride in personal service.
Absolutely. Again, we recognize that everything we do and are able to do starts with taking care of the people we serve. And that comes with our clients and the communities, and also our commitment to doing everything we can to help folks out You see that evidenced by our response with Paycheck Protection Program that was implemented as a response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Our bank has helped in the most recent round over 4,000 small businesses obtain the financing and the funds they need to ensure their survival.
And one of the things that makes Blue Ridge Bank really unique is something I don't know if any other bank in America does this, but you guys have a great jackpot for your customers.
Exactly, Jerry. Yeah, we have the BRB jackpot account, and that account is a way to reward savers and encourage them to put money back for life's future needs. We all recognize that in the United States, we have a significant personal savings crisis. And so we launched this account back in 2015. We were the first bank in the country to launch this product, and we did it to play a role and a part in helping to solve the country's financial savings crisis. And so if you put money into this account, you get an entry for every $25 that you deposit into the account. And this year, the grand prize is $100,000. So similar to a lottery, you buy the ticket, you get paid. Unlike the lottery, here, if you deposit the money, you increase your savings account. Even if you don't win the $100,000 at the end of the year, you still have additional savings for life's needs.
That's great. And for those interested in perhaps opening up an account or finding out more about Blue Ridge Bank, tell them how to find out more information.
Absolutely, Jerry. You can find our website at www.mybrb.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.